Good morning and welcome to Flight Logic Brief. I'm Alex.
And I'm Sam. It is Tuesday, May 12th, 2026, and we've got a packed show for you this morning.
We really do. Business aviation safety, an eVTOL regulatory milestone we've been waiting years for, fuel prices that just won't quit, and a Boeing investment story out of Wichita that honestly I did not see coming.
Yeah, the Wichita thing surprised me too. We'll get to all of it. But Alex, I think we have to start with the safety numbers, right?
We do. Let's start there. Source, Google News. So Business Jet Traveler is reporting that business aviation accident fatalities dropped 50% in the first quarter of 2026 compared to the same period last year. 50%.
That's a huge number. That is a huge number.
And before anyone jumps in, yes, one quarter is one quarter. The sample size is small. You can have statistical noise in.
Right, but...
But it's still meaningful. The trajectory matters.
No, and here's why I think it matters. We've been talking on this show for 2 years now about the safety management system push, about Part 5, about the way the National Business Aviation Association and Air Charter Safety Foundation have been hammering on operational discipline. This is what success looks like when you finally see it in the data.
Yeah, the cynic in me wants to say, well, we had fewer departures, fewer cycles. But that's not actually the case. Activity has been up.
Activity is way up. So fewer fatalities against a higher activity baseline. That's not noise. That's culture catching up to the regulation.
And it's not just SMS implementation. You've got the flight data monitoring programs in Part 91K and 135 maturing. You've got the aviation safety information analysis and sharing data getting better. You've got real-time operational risk assessment becoming standard at the bigger flight departments.
And training. Sim training has gotten so much more scenario-based. We're not just doing V1 cuts anymore. We're doing the actual chains that show up in accident reports.
Right, the chain of events training. That has paid dividends.
Now, pour a little cold water on it for me. What's the worry?
The worry is complacency. Every time we have a good quarter, the industry tends to relax. And the accident reports we get in this business are usually backloaded toward the back half of the year because of summer thunderstorms, fall pop-up weather, and the holiday flying push in December.
Yeah, fair. So we celebrate the trend, we don't declare victory.
Don't declare victory, but credit where it's due. That's a real number.
Speaking of business jets, Bombardier has news this morning too.
Yeah, the Global 8000 received Transport Canada Type certification. So now we've got the Canadian side of the certification picture buttoned up for what Bombardier is calling the world's fastest business jet, Mach 0.94 top end.
Mach 0.94 on a civil jet.
On a civil jet.
That is wild to me. I mean, the Concorde is gone, the Citation X retired, and now we've got an ultra-long-range jet that's effectively at the doorstep of supersonic on a routine basis.
Now, the FAA certification is the bigger gate for North American operators, and we're still watching for that. But Transport Canada being signed off matters for the operators registered up there, and it matters for the program credibility.
An 8,000 nautical miles range, New York to Hong Kong nonstop with reserves. That's a different category of mission planning.
That changes city pairs. That's the headline. It changes city pairs.
What else is on the Google News wire this morning?
Couple of market forecast reports. Forecast International is projecting that business jet output dips around 2030 after what they're calling a strong run. And separately, a market sizing report has the segment hitting $29.15 billion by 2034.
The 2030 dip is interesting. That's the typical cyclical hangover after a long upcycle. Backlogs work down, replacement demand softens, you get a couple of soft years.
And there's an Airbus corporate jet story. They're targeting India for ACJ220 sales growth.
That makes a lot of sense. India's high net worth population is growing fast. The regulatory environment for private aircraft registration has gotten clearer. And the 220s range out of Mumbai or Delhi puts most of Europe and Southeast Asia within reach without a fuel stop.
And the fourth quarter business jet activity numbers from Aviation International News closed out strong, by the way. So that 2030 dip Forecast International is calling for, it's not happening yet.
Not yet. Demand is still ahead of supply, and that brings us to our Aviation Week material. Source, Aviation Week BizAv.
Yeah, let's go there. Aviation Week BizAv has the Waypoint column out, and the headline there is first quarter business aviation demand continues to outpace supply.
Which we already knew. But it's important the market analysts are confirming it. Pre-owned inventory is still tight, days on market are still short on the desirable airframes, and pricing is holding firmer than a lot of people predicted given the geopolitical noise.
Healthy market, disciplined market. Those were the two phrases the industry leaders used.
Disciplined is the key word. because we've been through a couple of cycles in this industry where everybody chased the upside and got burned. This time, the brokers and the OEMs are pacing themselves.
Now, the harder story this morning, Jet A fuel prices.
Ugh!
$8.57 per gallon average across the U.S. for May.
$8.57.
That is down 6 cents from April.
6 cents, Alex. 6 cents.
I know.
That's a rounding error. That's a rounding error after we went up 209 year over year. That's a 32% year over year jump.
And the Western Pacific region had the biggest move month over month, according to the Aviation Research Group survey of FBOs.
The structural issue here is feedstock. The refinery margins on Jet A versus diesel have been pulling crude product into the diesel slate, and Jet A has had to bid up to compete. It's not going away in the near term.
And demand is up. So you've got the worst possible combination: tight supply, strong demand, and elevated feedstock.
For the charter operators, this is brutal because most of them are running on fuel pass-through arrangements that have ceilings, or they're locked into block hour pricing that didn't anticipate this.
The fractional guys are mostly hedged, but the on-demand 135 market, they're eating margin right now.
They're eating margin, and that pressure tells me we're going to see some consolidation in the smaller charter operators by the back half of the year.
Watch the regional 135 space. That's where the squeeze is going to show first.
Now, the other Aviation Week story this morning, Boeing is investing $1.3 billion into the Wichita site they reacquired.
Yeah, this was announced at the Boeing Backs America event on May 11th. $1 billion of that over the next 3 years going into the facility that makes critical components for the company's commercial and military airframes.
This is the Spirit AeroSystems facility, right? The one they bought back.
That's the one. Wichita has been making 737 fuselages and other critical structure for decades. Boeing spun it out years ago, and now they've pulled it back in.
And the investment commitment. This is Boeing trying to demonstrate to the FAA, to the airlines, and frankly to its institutional investors that they're serious about owning the supply chain on critical structure.
After everything that happened with the 737 production quality issues over the last few years, vertically reintegrating the fuselage production was probably inevitable.
It was inevitable. The question is whether they can execute it. Wichita has the talent. The talent is there. But the culture transition from being an independent supplier back to being a Boeing site, that's the hard part.
3 years to deploy $1 billion. That's an aggressive timeline.
That's aggressive. And it tells me they're trying to get production rates up before the 737 backlog gets stale.
Speaking of pressure on producers, let's move over to the Corporate Jet Investor material, source Corporate Jet Investor.
Big set of stories out of CGI this morning.
Yeah, let's start with Wheels Up. They posted first quarter revenue of $168.9 million, down 5% year over year, with an $83 million net loss. But, and this is the headline, they completed their fleet overhaul 18 months ahead of schedule.
18 months ahead of schedule. That is fast.
They retired the Citation X and the Hawker 400XP fleets entirely, replaced them with 36 Phenom 300s and Challenger 300s, standardized.
And that's the right move. The dispatch reliability story on the Citation X had become untenable. The Hawker 400XP fleet was aging out. Going to a two-type fleet of Phenom 300 and Challenger 300 dramatically simplifies training, parts, maintenance, crewing, everything.
And they raised new debt as part of completing this.
Of course they did. You can't do a fleet replacement of that scale without raising capital. The question is whether the unit economics on the new fleet are good enough to service the debt.
The bet is that standardization plus newer airframes plus dispatch reliability gives them the margin to do it.
And it's the right bet. I want to see the second quarter numbers before I declare it's working.
Fair. Then there's Gogo.
Gogo had a rough quarter.
Business aviation service revenue down 9% year over year to $154.4 million. Total revenues down 2% to $226.3 million. And the story is legacy aircraft deactivations.
Legacy network attrition. This is the air-to-ground network being wound down as customers transition to the satellite product.
The Galileo product.
The Galileo. And look, this was always going to happen. You can't transition a customer base from a legacy ground-based network to a low-Earth orbit satellite product without going through a valley.
The question is how deep the valley.
And how long. Because every quarter that legacy revenue is falling faster than satellite revenue is growing, the income statement looks ugly.
Wall Street has been patient so far.
Wall Street has been patient because Galileo bookings have been strong. If those bookings start to flatten out, that's when this gets dicey.
Three more out of CJI worth touching. Anthony Bonome appointed president of Flyhouse Solutions. That's the infrastructure consolidation play we covered a few weeks ago. Mente Group promoted Jay Bushaus to senior managing director after their record-breaking transaction year. And in Bermuda, Private Jet Club is making a niche play with $2,500 individual memberships, $5,000 corporate.
Bermuda is interesting. The aircraft registry there has been one of the more sophisticated jurisdictions for high net worth aircraft for a long time. And now you've got a brokerage layer building on top of that infrastructure.
And one more. The French Navy received its first of three Pilatus PC-24s through Jet Aviation France.
The PC-24 as a Navy aircraft. That's a great mission match. Short field, jet performance, cabin flexibility. It'll be a maritime patrol and personnel transport platform.
And Jet Aviation France is doing the maintenance and airworthiness management under contract.
Which is the smart way to acquire a foreign aircraft type for a military operation. You don't try to stand up a maintenance organization from scratch. You contract it.
Smart.
What's next?
Let's hit Simple Flying. They've got a deep slate this morning. Source Simple Flying.
Yeah, 10 items here. The one that jumped out at me right away. The U.S. Air Force more than doubling its F-15EX order.
From 129 aircraft to 267.
Doubled it. And this is a non-stealth fighter in the year 2026.
Right. But the reasoning is solid. The F-15C and D fleet averages 38 years old, exceeds certified service life in many cases.
And the F-35 production rate just can't fill the gap.
Can't fill the gap. And the F-15EX has some real advantages. 12 air-to-air missile capacity, 2 engine reliability for long overwater missions, mature supply chain.
It's the right airplane for the mission. Air dominance over the homeland and over allied airspace, not penetrating contested airspace. You don't need stealth for that.
And the FY22's budget request has 24 more units. So this is moving.
And related, the T-38 Talon is finally being retired after 60 years, with the Boeing T-7A Red Hawk getting full-rate production approval this month.
60 years on the T-38. I trained in that airplane. Or I knew people who trained in that airplane.
The T-7A has been a long, painful program. Schedule slips, ejection seat issues, software integration headaches. But getting to full-rate production is the milestone they've been chasing.
And the T-38 has been showing its age. Structural fatigue, parts availability. The legacy is incredible, but the platform is done.
Done. End of an era.
Two airline stories from Simple Flying. Qatar Airways announced a triangular route. Doha to Bogota to Caracas, twice weekly starting July 22nd. And separately, Riyadh Air filed with the U.S. Department of Transportation on May 6th for permission to operate to American cities with the A350-1000.
Riyadh Air. So now Saudi Arabia has two flag carriers competing for U.S. traffic, Saudia and Riyadh Air.
That's going to be a fascinating market dynamic.
And the Qatar route is a 20-hour rotation. That's the long way to get to South America from the Gulf.
Triangular routes are interesting because they share crew costs across two destinations. But the schedule on the back end is brutal.
And then American Airlines is killing the Phoenix to Tijuana route. 295 miles, shortest international segment they fly to Mexico, suspends August 2nd.
That route never made sense to me.
The bus runs that route, basically. The market just doesn't need a CRJ-700 to do it.
On the widebody side, Qantas is doubling down on the A380 despite previously expressing regret about the purchase. 10 of the 12 back in service, cabin upgrades going in.
The A380 had its second life forced on it by the supply chain. Nobody can get a 777 or an A350 fast enough, so the existing wide-body capacity becomes more valuable.
And on the design side, there's a great Simple Flying piece comparing the Boeing 777X wing development cost, about $2 billion, to the entire A330neo program, which was also about $2 billion total.
That's a damning comparison. One wing versus one entire airplane.
Carbon fiber folding wingtips, all the composite work. It's incredible engineering, but it's also extraordinarily expensive engineering.
And it's why the 777X is going to take a long time to be profitable for Boeing.
The other one I liked, the A321XLR, TAS crew rest piece. Deal Aviation developed a modular rest system because the XLR is doing 11-hour flights without a traditional wide-body crew rest area.
Right, you've got cabin crew on what's effectively a long-haul mission in a narrow body. The fatigue management question on that aircraft is going to be the big regulatory story for the next 2 years.
And there's a piece on aircraft dispatchers that I think every pilot listening should appreciate.
Co-authority for the safety of the flight under FAA rules. Most passengers have no idea those people exist. The pilot in command shares legal responsibility for that flight with someone sitting at a console hundreds of miles away.
Shared responsibility. People forget that.
Shared responsibility, shared liability, shared workload.
All right, let's get over to the air current. Source the air current.
The air current has the ATC modernization story.
Yeah, this is a fascinating one. The FAA has selected foreign contractors from Spain, France, and Austria for parts of the air traffic control system modernization program. And U.S. competitors, RTX Corp and L3Harris specifically, are pushing back, arguing it violates the spirit of the America First procurement policy.
And on its face, you can see why the domestic competitors are upset. We're talking about critical national infrastructure being built in part by foreign vendors.
But
the FAA has been very clear that the foreign vendors had better technology and better delivery timelines than the domestic bidders for those specific subsystems.
Indra in Spain, Thales in France, Frequentis in Austria. These are the world leaders in some of these specific ATC subsystems. They've been deploying this stuff in European airspace for a decade.
So the question becomes, do you accept a delay and a higher cost to keep it domestic? Or do you take the proven, faster, cheaper foreign solution?
The FAA picked the latter.
And honestly, given how badly we need ATC modernization, I think that's the right call.
The brand new air traffic control system program, the BNATCS as they're calling it, is the most ambitious overhaul we've seen since the original NextGen rollout.
And NextGen has been slow, painfully slow. If foreign vendors can accelerate the timeline, every pilot in this country benefits.
Watch the congressional hearings on this one. It's going to get political.
Oh, it's going to get political. Count on it.
Let's go to YouTube briefly.
Two interesting video pieces. One on Dassault, one on Piaggio.
The Dassault piece asks why a company with fly-by-wire technology, composite expertise, a global support network, and decades of airframe experience has never successfully entered the commercial airliner market.
And the answer is, they tried. The Mercure was a commercial flop in the 1970s. Dassault has stuck to military fighters and the Falcon business jet line ever since.
And honestly, that's been the right call. The Falcon line is profitable. The Rafale fighter is selling well internationally.
There's no good business reason for them to go compete with Airbus and Boeing.
The Piaggio story is more forward-looking. They're rolling out the NX version of the P180 Avanti. Improved performance, shorter landing distance, unprepared runway capability, upgraded cockpit avionics.
The Avanti is one of the most distinctive airplanes in the sky. That three-surface configuration, the pusher props, and the performance is actually remarkable.
Twin-engine turboprop with jet-like speeds and turboprop economics. It's a niche, but it's a real niche.
Unprepared runway capability is interesting for the NX. That opens up some mission profiles that traditional biz jets can't touch.
Special missions, remote operations, energy sector work.
Smart move by Piaggio.
All right, let's hit a few Reddit threads before we wrap up.
Yeah, what's caught your eye over there?
A couple of operationally interesting threads. One, a Cessna Caravan operator found an indentation on a brand new nose wheel tire. Less than a week old, normal flight ops, normal taxi. Damage just appeared.
That's a flat spot from a hard brake application, almost certainly. Either that or the tire was stored against a hard object before installation.
Worth pulling and inspecting.
Always worth pulling and inspecting. Tire failures on the Caravan are not common, but they are consequential because of the single-engine, often remote operating profile.
Another one. A pilot training on the Republic Airways application portal hit a validation issue. The form requires a non-zero value for instrument time logged in a flight training device.
That's a known issue with their portal. The workaround that's been circulating is to enter 0.1 and put a note in the comments section.
Republic should fix that.
Republic should fix that. It's a real barrier for applicants who got their instrument time in actual aircraft rather than a flight training device.
There was also a flight attendant asking about intermittent FMLA and whether it would affect future pilot employment.
This is the medical certification minefield. The short answer is, the FMLA leave itself is not reportable on a medical certificate application. The underlying condition that prompted the leave might be, depending on what it is.
And the distinction between aviation medical examiner reporting and employer reporting is one a lot of aspiring pilots don't fully understand.
Talk to a senior AME before you do anything that might create a record you'll have to explain. That's the rule.
Good advice.
And then there were a couple of celebratory threads. Somebody passed their PPL check ride. Somebody flew a 737 for the first time. Just good moments out there in the community.
The good news is part of the job.
The good news is part of the job. There was also a Hail Mary post. A family in Livingston County, Michigan, asking pilots in the area to do an informal flyover for a father's funeral on May 14th. The father was a former small craft pilot.
If anybody listening is in the area and can help out, those tribute flights mean a tremendous amount to the families. Coordinate with the local FBO, file appropriate notices, do it right.
Do it right. Don't make a Class B incursion to honor somebody.
Yeah, please don't.
And one more. There's a thread about C-5 Galaxies now slated to keep flying until 2050.
2050. That airplane will be 80 years old in some cases.
Strategic airlift capability is finite, and the C-5 cargo volume is just unmatched. As painful as the maintenance bill is, the Air Force has decided it's cheaper to keep flying them than to develop a successor right now.
The B-52, the KC-135, now the C-5, there's a pattern.
The pattern is, if you build a strategic airframe with sufficient margin in the structure, the Air Force will fly it until it absolutely cannot fly anymore.
All right, we need to wrap up.
Big show this morning. The 50% fatality drop in business aviation, that's the story I'm taking home.
That's the headline. We'll see if it holds through Q2. And we'll keep watching the fuel situation, the wheels up and go-go turnarounds, and the F-15EX procurement story as it develops.
A lot to track.
That's all the time we have. Fly safe out there, watch the weather, and remember, disciplined operations are what built that fatality number. Don't be the data point that reverses it.
I'm Sam.
I'm Alex. This has been Flight Logic Brief. We'll see you tomorrow.